So one of these nights, and about 12 o'clock, this over the Gonderdyland Rock. Saints, they all tremble and cry for pain, for the Lord's gonna come in his heaven airplane.
How are you doing, sir? DUI checkpoint? Have you had any alcohol drink tonight? You're not going to answer any of my questions? Sir? Sir? Sir, how are you doing? Is your car in park? Hey, you got a supervisor? You got a supervisor? Refusing to answer my questions.
Name and personnel number?
My name is Officer Aaron Johnson, Boulder City Police Department, P number is 291.
All right.
Have you had anything to drink tonight?
Cervantes! Sarge!
Have you had anything to drink tonight?
What did you say your name was?
Officer Aaron Johnson, P number is 291.
Boulder City PD.
Have you had anything to drink tonight?
All right, thanks.
Have you had anything to drink tonight? Refusing to answer my question, Sergeant.
Okay. Sir, we just need to know if you had something to drink tonight, that's all.
Okay.
Okay, you just have to answer that question and you'll be on your way.
I have to answer?
Have you had anything to drink tonight, sir?
What's your name and personnel number?
My name is Sergeant Cervantes, P number 7456.
All right.
Okay.
Am I free to go?
Have you had anything to drink tonight, sir?
Sergeant Cervantes, am I free to go?
Have you had anything tonight, sir? You can have a nice night, sir.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
What if this is God's work? Perhaps we should ask the last poets and Gil Scott Heron for permission to speak before we start. Some of my contemporaries act like we created the art when ain't none of us seen no parts of the charts for anything we write, and Gil Scott Heron done seen them twice. Once for the bottle and then for Johannesburg, and we stand and serve the listeners as if the pioneers ain't up on stage with us on their shoulders trying to hold us upright while we position ourselves as God's gift to the stage and the mic when Lord knows they were traveling the globe long before some of us were even flecks of light in our parents' eyes. And we self-romanticize to the point that the apparent size of our ego supersedes those facts like spoken words just waiting for us to be born but was still born before that. And they don't even go back to Kamal Daoud, Kalamu Yasalam, or Keith Roach. The furthest their legacy goes is their local slam culture, open mic poetry hosts. They can't be bothered to go back as far as Sekou Sundiata, then can't understand why I command such a high level of respect in this new generation of poetry, but perhaps it's because I have the sense and the reverence to study the ones that came before me. Been checking Nikki Giovanni ever since I could read, and Sonia Sanchez is like Ma Rainey, like Bessie Smith, like Big Mama Thornton, pitchforking the blues on a crossroads paved with wayward souls. These be them blues that flow deep below the floodwaters of Tupelo, and they look at me like so. What could they possibly know about Langston Hughes being the first among us to earn a living off of his words, especially when it's like 100 years later and they're still hotting from their boss at work, trying to create some type of cubicle masterpiece. And they can't be asked to read about how Phyllis Wheatley wanted to publish a book of pro-American poems but had to send it to Britain to do it, because to them that's just foolish. They live in an age where anyone can publish anything as long as they have access to a computer. And they feel like the only reason their name ain't ringing out yet is because the people who are listening to their work must be stupid. But could it be an over-reliance on monotonic monologue prose? Could it be a lack of originality and a failure to pay dues? Could it be the more you sleep in bus and train stations, the more you experiment with rhyme, texture, and cadence? Could it be the more you're forced to skip meals, the less you worship esoterica and begin to concern yourself with what working people consider real? To the extent you believe it's art to be perceived as incomprehensibly smart, you'll be finished with spoken word long before your dumb ass even have sense enough to ask for permission to start. So what if this is God's work? What if real poets walk the earth and live lives fit for a prophet's birth, spreading ancient wisdom like the Coptic Church, and those that know what they're hearing know that they're hearing something special? And perhaps eventually a poor to be seen here just to bless you, test you in this world of lies. And if you feel your eyes crowded because they recognize it, what they are seeing is the truth. And the chills up your spine to provide absolute proof that in this now, where politicians and clergy are proving themselves unworthy of your time, and television shows and music videos are proving themselves unworthy of your mind, don't be surprised to find that God is especially present in poetry dens, guiding poets' pens, and not just those men who pretend to be closer to God than you, by making you ashamed of your sins when the lives that they've lived may not have been what God intends for your salvation. What if this is God's work? What if the Creator realized that the creation is imperfect but only wishes for us to worship sincerely, to not be hypocrites but to really be concerned about our fellow man, to stand up against injustices falsely perpetuated in God's name in foreign lands? What if this is God's work? What if the poets are closer to Muhammad, Buddha, and Jesus than the preachers? I said, what if the poets are closer to Muhammad, Buddha, and Jesus than the preachers? I mean, think about it, y'all. What's if it's living closer to the streets? And what's if it's living closer to Caesar? What's if it's living high up on the hog? And what's if it's the poor righteous teachers? What if this is God's work? And if so, then poetry is sacred. So ye poets, be concerned. Would you step up on this stage with them? Be on your job. Because if this is God's work, then stealing from another poet is the same thing as stealing from God. And it's not about your use of sexuality or profanity. It's about whether you use your tools for ahs and oohs, or whether you use your tools to improve humanity. What if this is God's work? And no blasphemers have hell to pay, so I wouldn't say anything at Golden State tonight that I wouldn't be comfortable repeating on Judgment Day. What if this is God's work, y'all? Let us pray.
This is the conspiratorial view of history, as opposed to the accidental view. And it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
Sweet!
For now, Israel and the PLO have settled for half a loaf in their long haggling over Palestinian autonomy in Gaza and Jericho. Jesse Shulman reports on the signing of a partial agreement.
Prime Minister Rabin says he's very satisfied. He told Israel Radio he hopes a complete agreement can be negotiated in a month. Army commanders say Israel's pullback could be finished a month after that. Among Rabin's critics is opposition lawmaker Benjamin Begin.
These are the details, and the details are not that important. The substantial surrender to the PLO demands took place in Oslo 5 months ago, and the Israeli security forces will not be able to preempt terrorist activity.
Many Palestinians are worried too. One commentator says it's premature to talk of progress until living conditions improve. Others say PLO leader Yasser Arafat yielded too much to Israel's demands.
Why is he always trying to make it number one? It's a must. This ain't changing me. I still have the same beliefs. I can scream free Palestine. Die for my pride. Still pray for peace.
What rapper Mike Righteous was actually trying to say was free Palestine, but Palestine, it seems, is now a dirty word on the BBC.
I can scream free Palestine for my pride, still pray for peace.
The BBC has defended the decision to censor the word, which it says was on the basis that implying that Palestine is not free is contentious.
I think just in that one sentence, the BBC showed its complete disdain for Palestine, for the Palestinians, for their suffering. And it also showed its utter disregard for international law when international law is being violated by Israel, because clearly Palestine isn't free, it is under occupation. The UN recognises that. UN Resolution 242 calls for the withdrawal of Israel from Gaza and the West Bank. And, you know, saying free Palestine is just basically shorthand for that same UN demand.
And while it has admitted its staff may have been overcautious in their actions, it insists they were not biased.
What this Mike Righteous case shows, more than anything else, is a very, very urgent need for there to be an independent adjudicator which holds the BBC to account, which monitors its output, because I think what this has shown is that the BBC isn't capable of doing that. It will never, ever admit it's wrong, even in a case as blatant as this.
In 2009, the BBC sparked outrage with its refusal to air a British charity appeal by the National Disasters Emergency Committee during Israel's attack on Gaza.
People will die because of the BBC decision. Let me be clear about that.
While people can complain, their complaints will be heard by the BBC Trust, unlike all other UK broadcasters who have to answer to the British media regulator, Ofcom. And so the British Broadcasting Corporation is funded by the UK taxpayer, but is accountable only to itself.
Okay, listen up, it's a brand new track. But first, what I need to know is, can you rap? If not, don't worry, just follow me nice and carefully. Maybe soon you can also be grabbing hold of the mic, top, rhyming to the beat, tweet, tweet. So unique when you speak, always connect. Make sure they heard what you said. Max Normal TV with rap made easy.
The people of Israel came to terms with the need to compromise for peace. Our aspiration as a nation is to realize its values as a Jewish and democratic state, living side by side in peace with its neighbors. Controlling another people is not our desire, our interest, or our policy. On the contrary, we want the Palestinian people to have a viable, secure, and prosperous existence in a state of their own. This is not just a Palestinian aspiration, it is an Israeli interest as well. Two states for two peoples living side by side in peace and security is not a vague slogan, but a real necessity for the stability in the entire region.
Step one, take a deep breath. You sound weak if you don't inhale deep before you speak. Let's get ready to speak on the beat. No dreary flows, here we go, repeat after me. Mic check, 1, 2. Am I coming through? Nice and clear, yes, I am here.
Mic check, 1, 2. Am I coming through? Nice and clear, yes, I am here.
I have said before, and I will repeat again, that it is, I believe, in the interest not only of the Palestinians, but also the Israelis and the United States and the international community to achieve a two-state solution in which Israelis and Palestinians are living side by side in peace and security. We have seen progress stalled on this front, and I suggested to the Prime Minister that he has a historic opportunity to get a serious movement on this issue during his tenure.
Very good. Let's get ready for step two. We got the funky beat to help you all get loose. Here we go again. Let's get ready to speak on the beat. Four lines this time. Repeat after me. Dun, 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 dun. Oh, yes, yes. It's the mighty me on the mic, dressed fresh. Tss, out the box, individual. I think like I look like I sound original.
Ding, ding, ding. Oh, yes, yes. It's the mighty me on the mic, dressed fresh. Out the box, individual. I think like I look like I sound original.
Now you're holding that mic tight, rhyming to the beat, creak, creak. So unique when you speak, always connect. Make sure they heard what you said. Max Normal TV with rap made easy.
Finally, we discussed the issue of a prospective peace between Israelis and Palestinians. And I reiterated, and we discussed in depth, the principles that I laid out yesterday, the belief that our ultimate goal has to be a secure Israeli state, a Jewish state, living side by side in peace and security with a contiguous, functioning, an effective Palestinian state. Obviously, there are some differences between us in the precise formulations and language, and that's going to happen between friends.
Let's see. Oh yeah, step three. Only the best beats impress me. But now let's get ready to speak on the beat. You're doing good, here we go, repeat after me. I'm always upgrading, innovating, educating, entertaining. But I'm not a copycat, serving second-hand flavor. I'm not a parasite, I'm a creator.
I'm always upgrading, innovating, educating, entertaining. But I'm not a copycat, serving second-hand flavor. I'm not a parasite, I'm a creator.
President Peres has never been one to sit on the sidelines, and thankfully, we now have, with Prime Minister Netanyahu, a leader who understands how important it is to move forward. And as he has said, we also have a Palestinian president who shares that determination. I have sat with these two men individually and together. I have listened to them talk candidly and forcefully. They are getting down to business, and they have begun to grapple with the core issues that can only be resolved through face-to-face negotiations. I believe they are serious about reaching an agreement that results in two states living side by side in peace and security.
Now let's get into step four. Are you ready to get raw? Wonderful, we're on the ball, let's speak on the beat. Here we go, check it out, repeat after me. I've been into rappers back in the day. My parents thought it was just a phase or a craze. But look at me now, I'm still going through this phase in the days. Checking out the ways this phase pays.
I've been into rap since I know when. My parents don't even know what rap is.
What do you think?
Making mistakes is not that key.
All of us reaffirmed our commitment to reaching a shared goal of a just, lasting, and secure peace. Our common goal remains two states for two peoples, and we are committed to a solution to the conflict that resolves all issues with the State of Israel and a sovereign, independent, and viable State of Palestine living side by side in peace and security.
Okay, so Yolanda Fisso wants to get live. Okay, let's pump up the jam and take a two-step pop. Remember to take a deep breath before you speak on the beat. Can I repeat after me? You're traveling through an indefinite darkness. Absorb the gentle sentiment, the hum of your starship. There's always a lot of uncommon phenomena. In your monitor, all of a sudden, a beautiful shot of Andromeda pops up. Check it out. Okay, your turn, go.
You're traveling through an indefinite darkness. Absorb the gentle sentiment.
So, Howard, last one for you. Take on the larger question for me, if you would, please. Do you believe the statehood bid will set back the prospects of a settlement between the parties?
I think that this is an opportunity. I think it has been an opportunity for the past few months since Mahmoud Abbas began to talk about this PLO initiative for both sides to take it seriously and sit down and figure out how they could get back to the negotiating table. I think there's still a chance for that. I think there's still a chance that with the pressure of the quartet, with the United States behind it, that the Israelis and the Palestinians can figure out a way. The only solution to this problem is for an independent Palestinian state, Israel as an independent state, the two living side by side in peace and security, what we call the two-state solution.
Yeah.
There is no other option that gets us to peace.
Practice, if you want to follow me, terminal velocity, soon you can also be grabbing hold of the mic top, rhyming to the beat, freak. So unique when you speak, always connect, make sure they heard what you said, max normal TV, live and direct, grabbing hold of the mic top, rhyming to the beat, freak. So unique when you speak, always connect, make sure they heard what you said, max normal TV, with a rap made easy.
Yo, Landy, so funk.
Two states for two peoples living side by side in peace and security.
Two-state solution in which Israelis and Palestinians are living side by side in peace and security.
Living side by side in peace and security.
I believe they are serious about reaching an agreement that results in two states living side by side in peace and security.
Living side by side in peace and security.
The two living side by side in peace and security.
In my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in, to kind of catapult the propaganda.
Our two countries, thousands continue to live side by side in peace and prosperity.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
It's like the best show ever!
To understand
understand is to perceive patterns. Now, of course, what this means is that true comprehension comes when the dots are revealed and you get Stephen Johnson's long view and you see the big picture. This is the idea about patterns, 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 recurring patterns across different scales of reality. You know, Paul Stamets talks about the mycelial archetype and how the information sharing systems that comprise the internet look exactly like computer models of dark matter in the universe, look exactly like the neurons in a brain. They all share the same intertwinkled filamental structure. It's the rise of networkism as big data. Advocates talk about how man-made systems are looking exactly like natural systems. The more we can measure, the more we can visualize, the more we can visualize, the more expands our consciousness by seeing these recurring patterns across scales of reality. It blows my mind, and I think that technology increasingly is becoming an expander of human consciousness. It extends our thought, reach, and vision, and revealing so much more. It's like, whereas once I was blind, now I can see. Jeffrey West from the Santa Fe Institute is telling us that cities are really like organisms, you know, alleys are like capillaries. How is it possible that a man-made artificial technological system is behaving like a natural system? The more efficient it becomes, the more it's starting to look like nature. Really interesting, weird stuff. You know, but it makes me optimistic. It's like when Stephen Johnson says, look, if we can understand all this stuff, we can, I mean, anything becomes possible, right? It's the adjacent possible, standing as a sort of shadow future, a map of all the ways the present can reinvent itself. It's beautiful stuff.
Continue to tank. All right?
Wow. President Obama just finishing a furious address to the American people. Okay, let's go now to a special live in the know for some post-speech analysis.
Whoa.
Heavens!
What just happened?
That was he completely late.
I have never seen anything like it.
Certainly strayed from his prepared statement on the economy this evening,
budget cuts.
Instead choosing to chide the American people for laziness, being demanding, ungrateful,
just stood there with his
and
hands
chronically
on his hands.
Dissatisfied. What are your reactions to the president's
I thought he was joking, but then it was like, oh no, oh, he is serious.
Yeah, when he said, oh, I suppose you've all got some brilliant plan on how to fix the economy.
He was literally spitting. He was so mad.
Yes, he did. Okay. Let's look at a clip.
This notion that somehow I came in here to $800 billion. Do you just want government to do nothing? Why should the government in South Carolina that was kids are in that
gosh.
Is that a fair assessment from the president, do you think?
Not at all. It's the president's fault. I mean, he needs to make his expectations clear at the beginning of his term. We're not mind readers here.
Well, you know, I'd be angry too if I were president and everybody was telling me all day long how to do my job.
Oh, God, you're always up his ass.
I am not.
Let's go to a Onion News Network Insta poll to see how regular Americans are reacting. Looks like 30% are still sitting in front of their television screens feeling ashamed for making the president angry.
You know, personally, I thought that his approach was oversimplified. I mean, why does he have to yell at everyone when some of us weren't even the ones that were protesting his health care bill or his tax plan?
Okay, you know, look, maybe if everybody just went home tonight and actually read some of the legislation that Obama's trying
to pass. No one has time to do that!
Well, I'm sick of getting in trouble because some people aren't pulling their weight.
Gentlemen, now in light of this speech, analysts are speculating that it could be quite uncomfortable for Americans tomorrow when the president returns to work.
It's going to be super awkward.
Yeah, I just don't think we should bring it up.
No, I think it'll be fine. I mean, FDR got angry once at one of his fireside chats when he called America a sad sack hobo dump bucket.
Also, from the this is just plain stupid department, it appears that the slogan for President Obama's 2012 campaign will be winning the future. Winning the future. Unfortunately, it's abbreviated by WTF. WTF.
You know what I have to say to that?
Yes?
LOL. Good luck with that one.
Winning the future.
Oh, no.
Where the hell did he get this? Sarah Palin's the one who saw the abbreviation. You got her? Let's play her. She saw the abbreviation.
His theme last night in the State of the Union was the WTF, you know, winning the future. And I thought, okay, that acronym, spot on. There were a lot of WTF moments.
Shirley Bill.
We're only a year away from the 2012 elections, but the GOP is still looking for a clear frontrunner in their race for the White House. That's why today Republicans announced a new mystery candidate whose identity will be kept secret until he or she is elected president. With polls showing low voter enthusiasm for the current GOP candidates, Republican leaders are hoping the mystery candidate will be able to stir up the excitement they need to win in 2012.
Is the current crop of candidates not for you? Well, just close your eyes and embrace the mystery. You know, it could be Sarah Palin or Jeb Bush or someone much more qualified you've never heard of. Just remember, if Barack Obama wins a second term, you'll never know who your president could have been.
According to the GOP, the mystery candidate has all sorts of plans for fixing the economy, plans that will remain under wraps unless he is elected in November 2012.
Inside this silver briefcase is the answer to the nation's economic troubles. If the mystery candidate is not elected, he will board a plane taking the briefcase out of the country forever. Now, you don't want that, do you?
President Obama's re-election campaign attempted to do damage control a few hours ago by pitching Joe Biden as an even bigger wild card.
No matter what anyone says, Joe Biden is the original mystery man. No one knows what he's thinking. No one knows what he'll do next.
This isn't the first time the GOP has introduced a flashy new 2012 hopeful. In March, they attempted to stir up support in traditional red states by running Robosaurus, the mechanized car-eating dinosaur. But Robosaurus was rejected by the party faithful after he announced his pro-choice stance.
Slowly stick a knife inside me and twist it all around. I want love to grab my fingers gently, slam them in a doorway, put my face into the ground. I want love to murder my own mother and take her off to somewhere like hell or up above. And I want love to change my friends to enemies, change my friends to enemies, show me how it's all my fault. I won't let love disrupt, corrupt, or interrupt me. I won't let love disrupt, corrupt, or interrupt me. Yeah, I won't let love disrupt, corrupt, or interrupt me.
As dawn breaks, the violence in Homs continues. At least 50 people are reportedly dead in the city after Syrian forces attack several districts. The opposition group says this is down to Russian and Chinese vetoes on a UN resolution which would have condemned President Assad's crackdown. They say this has now given him a license to kill. Here, amateur footage seems to show a field hospital under attack. People scream in pain as medical staff do all they can to help. One of the latest casualties of the escalating violence is this little girl. She calls for Allah to punish those who killed her brothers. It's thought more than 7,000 people have been killed since the uprising in Syria began.
Walk right up and bite me, grab a hold of me and fight me, leave me dying on the ground. And I want love to split my mouth wide open and cover up my ears and never let me hear a sound. I want love to forget that you offended me or how you had defended me when everybody tore me down. Yeah, I want love to my friends to enemies, change my friends to enemies, show me how it's all my fault. Yeah, I won't let love disrupt, corrupt, or interrupt me. I won't let love disrupt, corrupt, or interrupt me. Thank you.
I don't believe you guys.
They believe in authority. They don't believe in freedom. They believe in oppression and authority. They don't believe in freedom.
What
boy? What? Oh, hold on! Hold on! Oh!
We got all this!
People are f***ing dumb. You can say what you want about this country, and I love this place. I love the freedoms we used to have. I love it. I love that. You know? I love it when it didn't take a catastrophe to get us to care for one another. I love the fact that we're on camera all the time from all angles. But you know what? You can say what you want about America. And I say, I love this place. I wouldn't have it any other way. Wouldn't live it any other time in history in any other place. But say what you want about America, land of the free, home of the brave. We got some dumb slick up for them saying floating around this country. Dumb slick up for them saying. Yeah. Yeah. Now, obviously, that doesn't include this audience. I understand that. You seem intelligent and perceptive, but the rest of them, holy jumping, fishing up balls. Dumber than a second coat of paint. And this ain't just ranting and raving. This ain't just blowing off steam. I got a little evidence to support my claim. It just seems to me, that only a really low IQ population could have taken this beautiful continent, this magnificent American landscape that we inherited. Well, actually, we stole it from the Mexicans and the Indians, but hey, it was nice when we stole it. It looked pretty good. It was pristine. Paradise. Have you seen it lately? Have you taken a good look at it lately? It's f***ing embarrassing. Only a nation of unenlightened half-wits could have taken this beautiful place and turned it into what it is today, a shopping mall. A big shopping mall. You know that? That's all you got. That's all you've got here, folks. Mile after mile of mall after mall. Many, many malls. Major malls and mini malls. They put the mini malls in between the major malls. And in between the mini malls, they put the mini marts. And in between the mini marts, you got the car lots, gas stations, muffler shops, laundromats, cheap hotels, fast food joints, strip clubs, and dirty bookstores. America the Beautiful. One big transcontinental commercial cesspool. And how do the people feel about all this? How do the people feel about living in a coast-to-coast shopping mall? Well, they think it's just dandy. They think it is cool as can be because Americans love the mall. They love the mall. That's where they get to satisfy their two most prominent addictions at the same time, shopping and eating. Millions of semi-conscious Americans day after day shuffling through the malls, shopping and eating, especially eating. Americans love to eat. They are fatally attracted to the slow death of fast food. Hot dogs, corn dogs, triple bacon, cheeseburgers, deep fried butter dipped in pork fat and cheese whiz, mayonnaise soaked, barbecued mozzarella, patty melts. Americans will eat anything. If you were selling sauteed raccoons lost on a stick, Americans would buy them and eat them, especially if you dipped them in butter and put a little salsa on them. This country is big time, pig time. Forget the bald eagle. You know what the national emblem of this country ought to be? A big bowl of macaroni and cheese. A big bowl, because everything in this country is king size. King size, extra large, and super jumbo. Especially the people. These people are efficient, professional, compulsive consumers. They think of that as their national pride. It's their civic duty. Consumption. It's the new national pastime. Not baseball. It's consumption. The only true, lasting American value that's left, buying things. People spending money they don't have on things they don't need. Money they don't have on things they don't need so they can max out their credit cards and spend the rest of their lives paying 18% interest on something that costs $12.50. And they didn't like it when they got it home anyway. Not too bright, folks. Not too bright. But if you talk to one of them about this, if you isolate one of them, you sit them down rationally, and you talk to them about the low IQs and the dumb behavior and the bad decisions, right away they start talking about education. That's the big answer to everything. Education. They say we need more money for education. We need more books, more teachers, more classrooms, more schools. We need more testing for the kids. You say to them, well, you know, we've tried all of that, and the kids still can't pass the test. They say, oh, don't you worry about that. We're going to lower the passing grades. And that's what they do in a lot of these schools now. They lower the passing grades so more kids can pass. More kids pass, the school looks good, everybody's happy, the IQ of the country slips another 2 or 3 points, and pretty soon all you'll need to get into college is a pencil. Got a pencil? Get in there, it's physics. Then everyone wonders why 17 other countries graduate more scientists than we do. Education! Politicians know that word, they use it on you. Politicians have traditionally hidden behind three things: the flag, the Bible, and children. No child left behind. No child left behind. Oh, really? Well, it wasn't long ago you were talking about giving kids a head start. Head start, left behind. Someone's losing ground here.
Justice Louis Brandeis once said, "Sunlight is the greatest disinfectant."
You know, I'm really excited about Peter Diamandis and Stephen Kotler's new book, Abundance. Right off the bat, they explain this idea that technology is a resource-liberating mechanism, and that scarcity is actually contextual. Something is only scarce until you develop the technology that turns it into something abundant. They introduce this concept of exponential technological progress, and to explain this, they talk about 30 steps. If you take 30 linear steps, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 30 steps later, you're at 30. If you take 30 exponential steps, 2, 4, 8, 16, 30 steps later, you're at a billion. That's the reason that the cell phone in your pocket today is a million times cheaper, a million times smaller, and a thousand times more powerful than a $60 million supercomputer was in the 1960s. That's the billion-fold increase in price and performance and miniaturization. You know, a young person with a cell phone in Africa today has access to better communications technology than the U.S. president did 25 years ago. So it's this concept of exponential growth, right? And then you have the rising billion around the world, people coming online for the first time, buying smartphones, joining the global conversation. You have a new generation of techno-philanthropists, you know, people that have made billions of dollars in the information age. They have the resources of nation states and they want to transform the world. You have DIY innovators, you know, leveraging emerging technologies to impact the world in a positive way. And so the book ends up being a kind of really optimistic take on a possible path that we could take. We could leverage these emerging technologies that are evolving exponentially, and we can transform the world. It's up to us, and abundance shows us how.
36 foot long, this is one seriously large dead whale shark, and those are some seriously excited fishermen. Scores of curious locals gathered at the Karachi harbour in Pakistan to catch a glimpse of this epic creature being hauled from the sea. Weighing in at 7,000 kilos, the massive fish was found semi-conscious by a passing fishing trawler. It took two cranes to pull the carcass out of the water.
Rumours about big cats hiding in the British countryside have been around for decades, but is this the proof? Footage showing what appears to be a large black cat has been captured near Stroud, Gloucestershire, by teaching assistant Corin Memory. Just a moggy? Far from it. Experts put this model in the exact position where the big cat was found and superimposed the images.
Not bad, actually. If we could just emphasize the U.
If we look at that, you can see that head roughing a line out. That must be, I would have thought, probably another foot.
And if you needed more proof, that's a fox in the foreground. Yes, this, the experts believe, is one big cat. So, is it real? Well, several large animals have been found dead in the area recently, all with puncture wounds to the neck. Shoes on the table.
What is that? Oh, it kind of makes us feel all weird inside. Well, many think it's Iceland's version of the Loch Ness Monster, a so-called river worm. Apparently, that's the most well-known monster in the country's folklore, having started life as a small heather worm that grew and grew when it was put on a gold ring. Others just think it's some net that's got caught up in the ice. Well, whatever it is, it creeps us out and it's going to put us off our lunch.
Washed ashore. No one knows how these dolphins died, but hundreds have been found on beaches in Chiclayo, Peru. At least 260 dolphins washed ashore across a roughly 60-mile stretch of beach, and local residents quickly carved them up for meat. Officials aren't sure what happened to them, but they haven't ruled out the possibility that they were hunted. An event like this is particularly unusual because dolphins aren't normally found in these seas.
Because we can imagine we are free, you know, the Imaginary Foundation, which I adore and I quote them all the time, they say that the whole you know, the goal of human imagination is to imagine, to conjure up all these delightful future possibilities, these delightful future scenarios. Pick the most amazing and ecstatic one, and then guess what? Pull the present forward to meet that possibility. And guess what? We can do that. You know, Ray Kurzweil talks about the fact that because we can create virtual models in our brains that combine with our modest-looking thumbs, that was sufficient to usher in the secondary force of evolution called technology, and how it will continue until the entire universe is at our fingertips and impregnate the universe with intelligence. Or Terence McKenna, when he says that, you know, what human beings do is take in matter of little organization, put it through our mental filterings, literally, and then extrude it in the form of space shuttles or iPhones. I mean, that's literally what's going on. If you were able to look at human progress as if through a time lapse over the last 100 years, you would see that literally thoughts spill over into the world in the form of technology. We engage in feedback loops with that technology, which then extends our ability to instantiate new realities in the world. You know, people talk about rendering files on Final Cut Pro, you know, like, well, we're more and more rendering our visions, our dreams, onto the instantiated Euclidean meat space. That's incredible. That's only increasing. You know, our capability, our ability to do that is only increasing because, you know, we're only limited by our imagination, and it's really the case. I mean, what you have now is this, you have exponential progress, right? These exponential growth curves in information technology that point to the fact that the computer in your cell phone today is 1,000,000 times cheaper, 1,000,000 times smaller, and 1,000 times more powerful than a $60 million supercomputer was that was half a building in size 40 years ago. That's a billion-fold increase in price and performance and miniaturization. That's going to continue. So in the next 25 years, computers will be the size of blood cells interfacing with our biological bodies, trillions of times more powerful capabilities. And then you also have that information technology exponential growth curve spilling over into biotechnology. Freeman Dyson talks about the domestication of biotech, you know, things like GPS that were once these big government things, and now everybody has GPS on their phone. So imagine the same thing with biotechnology. It's not going to be like Monsanto, big genetic engineering corporations. No, it's going to be that we're each going to be able to like engineer our own food and have in vitro meat and reprogram our own biochemistry, upgrade our biology, live longer, reverse engineer aging, stop entropy from killing us. I mean, And then, okay, that's biotech. Then you have nanotechnology, which is to manipulate matter at the level of the atom. So at that point, the building blocks of the physical world will be programmable. So literally, we can turn, you know, dog-ish into pearls. I mean, talk about abundance. Talk about giving the world everything they could ever need and more. I mean, each of us increasingly moving into universes of our own construction. Then artificial intelligence, virtual reality, hacking into our nervous systems, creating non-biological intelligence or a biotechnological hybrid that augments and feeds upon itself in some recursive feedback loop that then expands onto forever. And you're talking about substrate-independent minds, trillions of times more powerful than we are now. And you know, if we can imagine it, why not make it so?
The first of its kind. A full coverage image of the moon as photographed by China's second lunar orbiter, the Chang'e 2. The image was unveiled by Chinese government officials on Sunday. The resolution of the picture is 7 meters or more, and this is the first time a spacecraft has been able to take a picture that detailed. The satellite's now orbiting the second Lagrange point, meaning it's nearly 1,000,000 miles away from Earth.
Good afternoon. It's February 7th, 2012. This is for my daughter, Hannah, and more importantly for all her friends on Facebook who thought that her little rebellious post was cute. And for all you parents out there that think your, you know, kids don't post bad things on Facebook, well, I want to read you one. I took off my daughter's Facebook wall. She thought she'd be smart by blocking her parents and being able to see it. Hannah, you were grounded for about 3 months for doing something very similar to this. And I would have thought, with a father that worked in IT for a living, you'd have better sense than to do it again. But I just spent about 6 hours yesterday fixing your computer for you, upgrading it for you, spent about $130 on software. And today, I run across a post on your Facebook page that you didn't think I'd be able to see. So since you want to hide it from everyone, I'm going to share it with everybody. This is called To My Parents, by the way. To my parents, I'm not your damn slave. It's not my responsibility to clean up your s***. We have a cleaning lady for a reason. Her name is Linda, not Hannah. If you want coffee, get off your ass and make it yourself. If you want a garden, shovel the fertilizer yourself. Don't sit back on your ass and watch me do it. If you walk in the house and get mud all over the floor that I just cleaned, be my guest. But clean it up after you're done getting s*** everywhere. I'm tired of picking up after you. You tell me at least once a day that I need to get a job. I love this part. You could just pay me for all the s*** I do around the house. Seriously? Are you kidding me? I'll get to that in a minute. Every day when I get home from school, I have to do dishes, clean the countertops, all the floors, make all the beds, do the laundry, and get the trash. I'm not even going to mention all the work I do around your clinic. And if I don't do all that every day, I get grounded. You know how hard it is to keep up with chores and schoolwork? It's freaking crazy. I go to sleep at 10 every night because I'm too tired to stay up any longer and do anything else. I have to get up at 5 in the morning to get ready for school. On the weekends, I have to sleep with my door locked so my little brother won't come get me up at 6. That part's true. This is all true. This is what she's saying. And I'm tired of this bull****. Next time I have to pour a cup of coffee, I'm going to flip shit. I have no idea how I have a life. I'm going to hate to see the day when you get too old to wipe your ass and you call me asking for help. I won't be there. Signed, your pissed kid, Hannah. I don't know how to say how disappointed I am in you and how disrespectful you were to every single adult in your life. But kid, you got it easy. Way easy. It's about to get harder. It's about to get a whole lot harder today. Because you're not going to see this, and for all I know, you might not ever see it. But as soon as I'm done, I'm going to post this on your Facebook wall. So all those kids that thought it was cool for how rebellious you were can see what happens. And all the parents may get an idea to put a boot up their own kid's ass. Because all this, I mean, there was more curse words in that one post. Just ridiculous. Not happening. Disrespectful to me, your mother, your stepmother, your family, your friends, and yourself. So I'm going to put a stop to it. And I'm going to put a stop to it right now.
That right there is your laptop. You see it's out here on the ground. This right here is my 45. That was the first round. These are exploding hollow point rounds from, and you have to pay me back for these too, because these are about a dollar a piece. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Oh yeah, and after that comment you made about your mom told me to be sure I put one in there for her, so that one's from her. And if I got one left, I got two left. Now I'm out.
Last month, the Taggart family of Cedar Mill, Oregon, set off a firestorm of controversy after petitioning the state for the right to end the life of their 13-year-old brain-dead daughter. Jean Ann Wharton takes us beyond the facts.
Caitlin Taggart was a beautiful, lively girl who loved laughing and playing outside, but all that changed at the age of 12. Caitlin slipped into a persistent vegetative state, confining her almost entirely to her bed and Facebook.
She doesn't even have basic motor functions anymore. We literally have to drag her to the car to drive her to school in the morning.
She's totally unresponsive when we talk to her. Her eyes just roll back in her head.
Caitlin, honey, it's your dad.
With no hope that their daughter would ever recover, the Taggarts decided to seek legal permission to end Caitlin's life.
It is the most difficult decision we've ever had to make, but we just keep reminding ourselves that the real Caitlin is already gone. That's just her body texting.
But the Taggarts soon found themselves at the center of a heated controversy as euthanasia opposition groups mobilized to stop them. These protesters say the groans and exasperated sighs Caitlin sometimes makes prove there is hope for recovery. But the Taggarts' physician, Dr. Kevin DeBacker, disagrees. Ew.
The sounds and movements that Caitlin makes are caused by random synapses firing in what's left of her brain tissue as a response to atmospheric changes, like it being cold in a restaurant or her mother bursting into a room, even though there is a little thing called privacy.
Dr. DeBacker believes euthanasia is a humane way to end Caitlin's suffering.
We give her one painless injection, and that's it. Her eyes may flutter a bit, or she may murmur, "Are you for real killing me right now?" But then her struggle will finally be over.
Well, you know, there's this interesting idea called the extended mind thesis, which is absolutely fantastic. I mean, it has to do with the fact that as our technological tools, I think the iPhone is the perfect example, they become increasingly sophisticated. They are more than just tools. They actually become an extension of us, outsourced cognition, if you will. Just as we have, you know, the frontal lobe or the neocortex, and it equips us with this added functionality of mind, so too does our iPhone, which gives us technologically mediated telepathy. And whereas our iPhone may not be physically tethered to us, it is very much a part of us. And when you see somebody who has fully integrated the capabilities of the iPhone, who has become an extended being, a transbiological hybrid species, a cyborg, so to speak, in the best possible way, this is the kind of person who has assimilated that functionality so well that for them, they have the ability to search all of the world's knowledge, to record real life as it's happening, to connect with an infinite amount of other minds through time and space, creating techno-social wormholes. They get to do all that with the same ease that they might scratch an itch on their ear. And that is what it means to be an extended mind today. To literally be an organism, to be Homo sapien today, is to be an organism for whom it's just as easy to scratch their ear as it is to communicate with the entire world through time and space, fly through the sky in a helicopter, fly in a jet plane. That is what it really means to be extended man. You might picture the Vitruvian man that Da Vinci designed. So picture the Vitruvian man with these labels pointing at his different anatomical features. These are his hips, this is his brain, this is his neocortex, and he's holding an iPhone. The extended man is the Vitruvian man holding an iPhone, and there'd be a little diagram pointing to the iPhone, and it says that's the extended mind, and this gives him telepathy and universal access to the world's information and the ability to create techno-social wormholes at full time and space. I mean, it's literally that.
Do you like being a participant in the watering can of the flowers of freedom throughout the world?
How are you doing, sir? DUI checkpoint? Have you had any alcohol drink tonight? You're not going to answer any of my questions? Sir? Sir? Sir, how are you doing? Is your car in park? Hey, you got a supervisor? You got a supervisor? Refusing to answer my questions.
Name and personnel number?
My name is Officer Aaron Johnson, Boulder City Police Department, P number is 291.
All right.
Have you had anything to drink tonight?
Cervantes! Sarge!
Have you had anything to drink tonight?
What did you say your name was?
Officer Aaron Johnson, P number is 291.
Boulder City PD.
Have you had anything to drink tonight?
All right, thanks.
Have you had anything to drink tonight? Refusing to answer my question, Sergeant.
Okay. Sir, we just need to know if you had something to drink tonight, that's all.
Okay.
Okay, you just have to answer that question and you'll be on your way.
I have to answer?
Have you had anything to drink tonight, sir?
What's your name and personnel number?
My name is Sergeant Cervantes, P number 7456.
All right.
Okay.
Am I free to go?
Have you had anything to drink tonight, sir?
Sergeant Cervantes, am I free to go?
Have you had anything tonight, sir? You can have a nice night, sir.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Now, go find the others. .com.
Yeah, man, I tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just go on there and point and click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.